Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN, the Independent Voter News. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Nick Branya, founder and national coordinator of the Movement for a People's Party, which seeks to create a major new progressive populist political party in the United States. Previously, Mr. Branya served as the National Political Outreach Coordinator for Senator Sanders' 2016 presidential campaign and as a founder and electoral manager of Our Revolution. He also was Deputy Director of Voter Protection for Terry McAuliffe's gubernatorial campaign and worked on then-Senator John Kerry's PAC. He's a first-generation American and is obviously very politically active. He's going to share what the People's Party movement is about and how it hopes to impact our political environment. Welcome to Deconstructed, Nick.
Hi, TJ. It's great to be with you.
Help my audience understand the genesis for this very aggressive movement for a People's Party. When did it begin and why?
Absolutely. A little bit about my background is that I worked on a number of different Democratic campaigns, including establishment campaigns, and quickly became disillusioned with the way that the two parties were both taking big money and were both not representing massively popular progressive populist policies among the general public. And so that ended up with me joining the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2016, like you mentioned. And my role there was lobbying the superdelegates for Bernie Sanders, the party establishment insiders who are on the DNC and who have the equivalent of 10,000 of a regular person's vote towards the presidential nominee. And that was the last straw for me. That was where I said, neither of the two major parties can be salvaged, can be reformed. What we really need is what the majority of Americans are now calling for, which is a major new party. In fact, you have 62%, almost two-thirds, 62 to 33% of Americans in a recent Gallup poll that's an all-time high calling for a major new party. And for the first time, you had 50% of Americans, half the country, show up as independents in a different Gallup poll. And so there's an immense hunger for this. And so that led to me and a number of others from the Bernie campaign, staff and delegates and volunteers, getting together and launching Draft Bernie for a People's Party, which became the Movement for a People's Party. And in 2020, following the way that the two parties handled coronavirus, in just the horrific way, 50 million unemployment claims, wiping out small businesses across the country. That terrible response, which every other country responded in a better way by subsidizing payroll for employees or by providing basic income. After seeing that, and after the DNC once again rigged its primary process to block Bernie Sanders as a far more popular candidate in the Democratic primary in 2020, and as the most popular politician in the country, from being the nominee once again, once they colluded once again to block him as they did in 2016, then we really exploded in popularity. Our membership tripled. We passed more than 150,000 members. That's where we're at now. And now we are building the party in states across the country. We're building state central committees. We have registered in California, in Maine, in Colorado, in Ohio, and many others are coming soon. And so that's kind of how it started, and that's where we are now.
Nick, how would you express the goal of the People's Party?
The goal is to provide the kind of representation that the American people deserve, but they don't have. It is to embody the things that they actually want. There was a now famous study conducted by Princeton and Northwestern University in 2015 that stated that the United States cannot even be classified as a democracy. It has to be considered an oligarchy in terms of political science because we don't have the will of the public and the policy preferences of the public here actually have, in their words, a quote, near zero statistically insignificant impact on policy decisions coming out of Washington, D.C. And that's not just the Republicans, it's not just the Democrats, it's both parties, and it's both parties together. And the two parties together have in fact been moving further and further in that direction in the last 50 years, when there's been an incredible concentration of wealth, there's been a complete ignoring of the climate crisis, and there's been an explosion in the cost of healthcare, the cost of student debt, and the cost of housing, the cost of living. It used to be that a family could survive on a single income and could live well, could live a good middle-class life. Now you have families where both spouses are working, they're working multiple jobs, and they still can't afford rent. You can't afford rent on a minimum wage in any city across the country. And so we seek to reverse all of those trends and instead say, you know what? In the richest country in the history of the world, people deserve the things that the citizens of other countries take for granted. They deserve a universal Medicare for all single payer healthcare system. They deserve a livable climate. They deserve a living wage. They deserve strong unions. They deserve the ability to live without being killed, people of color, by police. And so these are the things that we say that we need to bring government back in alignment with what the people want. And that's how we describe our mission.
You have some philosophical underpinnings on your website under the People's Plan. Can you speak to a few of the more critical ones?
Certainly. Some of them are some of the ones that I've mentioned. When we say that we believe in building a major new progressive populist party, by that, we mean that it should be rooted in what the people want, the actual preferences of the people. So it should be democratic, both the decisions on a policy level and the party itself. And we also believe that it must be corporate free. And so we think that there is no such thing as a political party that actually represents working people and stands up for their interests while taking corporate money. I mean, we've seen that countless times from different candidates. Both major parties are swimming in corporate money. They have corporate lobbyists on their national committees. The DNC is just as guilty as the RNC. And corporations have interests that are fundamentally opposed to that of working people. Their goal is to maximize profit, and that gives them an incentive to drive down wages. It gives them an incentive to reduce benefits. It gives them an incentive to cut corners on workplace safety, as we've seen with Amazon over the past year. And the interests of the people who are working at those companies, the interests of the people in general, are opposite and opposed to those interests. And we believe that there needs to be a much greater balance of power in terms of the people need to be the ones whose interests are placed first and foremost.
Well, Nick, we're going to take a quick break and talk about the People's Party platform when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Nick Branya, founder and national coordinator of the Movement for a People's Party. Nick, one of your party's plans specifically references political revolution. It says, wipe away the old system and bring the people's platform to life. So let's talk about the specifics of the people's platform. The first point that's made is an economy that works for everyone. What exactly does that mean?
That means an economy where working people are provided enough to live. They're provided healthcare as a universal human right, as it is in many other developed and wealthy countries, in fact, most, as it's been in Canada for 50 years. Expanding the definition of human rights is really a way to encapsulate it. Ensuring that education falls under that, a livable climate falls under that, a good paying job, a basic income, housing for all. That's how I would define it, as that an economy that provides for people's basic needs as human rights. Because we've discovered, as in fact FDR said in his State of the Union address in 1944, talking about the post-war world that he envisioned, that we've come to realize that it is not enough just to afford civil freedom to people, but really the definition of freedom has to encompass economic rights. It has to encompass the things that I've brought up, the right to an education, housing, a secure retirement, a livable wage, and healthcare as human rights. And so that's what we seek to do. And it's not something that is whatsoever radical. It's things that countries in Europe, countries in Latin America, do provide for all their citizens, and countries that are much less wealthy than the United States. And so we believe that the citizens of the United States are absolutely just as deserving as the citizens of those countries.
You bring up an interesting point. When I hear human rights brought up and you touch upon Medicare for All, your organization looks towards free public college and quality education and so forth, and even some immigration issues. What I don't hear from the major parties is what partisan programs are they willing to give up? Because obviously all of these things take funding, and there is a limited supply of cash to be able to do this without dramatically impacting everybody's life. So if you were to entertain these discussions, what types of partisan social programs would the People's Party be willing to surrender, whereas the Democrats and Republicans may not?
There is no end to the waste and the fraud and the abuse in our government's budget right now. And the most obvious place to start is the Defense Department. The defense budget consumes well over half of discretionary spending. It's more than $700 billion, and it's increasing constantly. In fact, it's so much money that the Pentagon ends up sending billions of dollars back because they say, we don't know what to do with all of this money. A lot of it is just waste in the sense that, for example, the government continues to build tanks. It continues to build outdated tanks, and it's just storing them out in the desert in the West. But those tanks that will never see use, tanks that the military has even said that they have no function anymore. And these are enormously expensive pieces of military equipment to build. On the same token, the government is waging wars, both the Democrats and the Republicans, totally bipartisan wars. Obama came in, he normalized all of the wars that the Bush administration was waging in Iraq and Afghanistan, and in fact expanded them as drone wars in several other countries. And that could cut an enormous amount by cutting that, and would have the added benefit of bringing our troops home, and at the same time, bringing our country more in alignment with the international community and in not committing human rights atrocities across the country and across the world and not being involved in wars around the world. Another place is where there is enormous waste is in our corporate tax policy and in our individual tax policy. And so on both of those, looking at individual tax rates, for example, back in the 40s and the 50s, the individual tax rate was at 90%, and it has since fallen precipitously under both Democrats and Republicans. The corporate tax rate was likewise higher. And so by raising both of those, there's a substantial amount of funds that could be raised as well. And those corporations, of course, they benefit from the infrastructure that our taxes provide. Many corporations, in fact, don't even pay taxes in the end. You have companies like GE, which by the time they're done calculating all of their loopholes, offshore tax havens, they have an effectively negative tax rate, which is truly a scandal. And so those are some ways that we could recoup funds and help reduce inequality. A financial transactions tax is another way. And so there's plenty of potential out there. And again, I would point to the fact that the U.S. is the richest country in the history of the world, and the problem is that that wealth isn't distributed whatsoever equitably.
Nick, would you try to eliminate the loopholes first, or would you default to raise taxes first?
Well, I don't see why you have to do one first or the other. I think we could pursue all of these, and I think they should all be pursued at the same time. We're now engaging in looking for candidates. We've put up candidate nominations. We'll be running about a dozen candidates for Congress in the midterms. And then we intend on running for president in 2024. And our president and our members of Congress will fight for those things on day one, immediately, on changing these budgetary priorities that we have that are so skewed towards war and that are so skewed towards plutocracy rather than providing for people.
Now, as the People Party is positioned as a progressive populist party, let's talk about free public college and quality education so definitionally my audience can understand where you're positioned. Let's assume we have free public college. What is the definition of quality education? And for example, what is the party's potential position on hate speech?
No, we oppose hate speech. That's an easy one.
Who defines it, though? That's not an easy one. Who defines it? Because right now we're in a situation where it is skewed in definition and there's no real clarity. So who defines it within the context of your party's view?
Mm-hmm. Well, for a society, the government has to define that. The government has to define, I think we have the basis, obviously, of a definition in the First Amendment. And hate speech for us is things that would be categorized as blatant racism, blatant sexism, you know, the singling out of groups by racial, gender, any of those statuses.
That puts you ahead of the Democrats and the Republicans who failed to define it. It's hate speech right now has defaulted to anything that disagrees with what a particular party has to say. It's good to hear that you're looking at a different criteria. Just out of curiosity, what about affirmative action? How do you feel about affirmative action since you raised racial issues as well? Is that something the party would support, or is that something the party would walk away from?
That is something that we find to be an equitable program that helps reduce historic inequalities. But we find the ways that that is going to be done best is, in fact, by universal programs. We think that the United States, one of the things that sets it apart from most of the developed world, is the absolute absence of universal programs, the large relative absence of universal programs. And so we as a society have decided that is beneficial to society as a whole for us to provide education from K to 12. And what we're saying is that, in fact, as many other societies have done, we can now expand that definition, and we should, from pre-K to college. And that's what we believe in providing for everyone, because we think that everyone should have a right to get an education regardless of their background, of the class that they were born into. They shouldn't be held back by that. That should be a human right.
I would agree with you on that. And I think that's a discussion this country needs to have. The reason I raised affirmative action is because it's used to mask a symptom as opposed to necessarily resolve the problem. I would hope that your party, perhaps looking at things in a fresh way, would look at how do we make K through 12 equitable for every student, as opposed to ignoring what transpires during those years and then awarding some advantage to getting into college when we have fundamentally ignored some of the inner city students and so forth relative to preparation. Nick, we're going to take another quick break and talk more about the People's Party platform when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Nick Branya, founder and national coordinator for the Emerging People's Party movement. Nick, one of the most critical elements of your party is getting money out of politics. Why is that so important?
Getting big money out of politics is the kind of issue that holds every other issue back at this point, because big corporate money going into campaigns, the enormous amount, particularly after the Citizens United decision, but even before that, it is warping our politics in a way that regular working people cannot compete. We essentially don't have a democracy anymore. We have an auction. We have multiple presidential campaigns are in the multi-billions of dollars. And so one of the most fundamental beliefs of ours is that we have to get corporate money and big money out of politics. And that can be done with publicly financed elections, as is the norm in many other countries. And we believe that when you do that, that will make campaigns and that will make contests and representation rooted in ideas and rooted in a challenge in the contrast between ideas, rather than it being a contest of who can bring in the most money, because that should not be the determinant. The determinant should instead be, what does the public want? That's what democracy is supposed to mean. And so we, as the People's Party, take no corporate money. We take no big money. We have a maximum contribution of $5,000. And that is a policy that when our representatives get to Congress, when we get to other positions in government, we are going to be able to more effectively and truly represent the constituents of those districts and people across the country, because we're not burdened by those commitments to lobbyists or to Wall Street donors.
Now, in looking at your website, you align with union organizations. Do you accept money from union organizations?
And so union organizations that are rooted in membership dues, when we have political action committee, which right now we don't, then we'll be able to accept those. Right now, we don't.
Help me understand the difference between a corporation and a union, because in either case, they can't completely represent their membership accurately. And each of their members, whether they're an employee of a corporation or a member of a union, each of those individuals has the ability to make their own contribution or cast their own vote. So how do you distinguish the two?
True. Well, the corporation is fundamentally based on making profit for itself and for its investors and for its executives. And the union is supposed to be rooted in representing the workers' rights in the workplace and improving their working conditions, improving their pay. And so for unions that are doing that, that's why we draw that distinction. It's drawn from membership, that is drawn from membership dues for many small donors.
Well, I'd encourage you to consider the fact that corporations and unions are very similar, and that the people can be individually represented. So just to encourage you to think through that as you move forward. I know it's difficult to walk away from that type of money, but that's one of your goals. Now, you've said that you have 150,000 plus people at this point in time, but you've also talked about not only pursuing local elections in state, but also federal elections, and by 2024, posing a presidential candidate. Given the fact that you need, even if you split the parties and there are three viable parties at that point in time, you're going to need 42 to 52 million votes to capture the presidency. How quickly can you get to that type of number?
That's true. But with the right candidate and the level of frustration and the level of desire for an independent party that we're seeing now, with nearly half the country being independent, only a quarter affiliating with the Democrats or the Republicans, almost two-thirds of Americans looking for a major new party, with the right kind of candidate and the level of frustration that has built up, historic levels of frustration and lack of confidence in institutions, unprecedented, then we believe that people will go for that kind of alternative if it is presented to them, if it is available to them. As to the spoiler effect, and the argument that running a candidate is going to detract from the Democrats or is going to detract from one of the parties that some people may agree more with, we would argue that, in fact, voting for the lesser of two evils for decades on end is exactly what has brought us to this point, with massive wealth inequality, with the climate crisis, with the never-ending wars, with the unaffordable basic education. It's brought us to this point, healthcare. And so really everything that we were told, every reason that we were given to vote for the lesser of two evils in election after election after election, so that the trade deals wouldn't destroy and outsource our jobs, so that housing would be affordable, so that people wouldn't lose their jobs, would have good paying jobs. All of those things were actually not delivered because we continue to ascribe to that lesser of two evils logic that allows both of the parties to keep moving towards their corporate donors without having to speak for working people and their constituents.
How will the People's Party distinguish itself from the myriad of other third parties?
Well, because we have this hard line that not every other party, of course, has on taking big money. And also because we are bringing in really capable and experienced people who have participated in running winning campaigns, who participated in building political party structures that are successful. And so we're bringing in a kind of knowledge that does not appear to be common in a lot of independent parties. And we're also running on the issues that are the most popular in the country. getting big money out of politics, universal pre-K, net neutrality, free public college, a federal jobs guarantee, ending a mandatory minimum sentencing. These are some of the most popular issues in the country. They have 60, 70, 80, 90% support, and yet there's no representation within the major parties on this massive slew of policies. And that is a widening chasm of non-representation that only continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And that is only something that can go on for so long. There's only so long that the two parties can dissolve and millions of people can leave, that they can become independents. There's only so high that the percentage of people calling for a major new party can rise. There's only so low that the figures of confidence in institutions and in the two parties can fall before there is a break and there is a realignment. And we think that we're there.
One short question. Since you're leaning progressive and you tend to lean towards the Bernie Sanders element of the Democratic Party, you talk about attracting the best in your pillars of the party plan and drawing progressive organizations and influencers out of the Democratic Party. Is there any concern about damaging the liberal infrastructure that's in place, or is just the risk of allowing it to continue too big?
We relish the opportunity to bring down both the Democrats and the Republican parties. Both of those parties are obviously not serving working people. And so pulling people out of them, pulling organizations, pulling institutions out of them, pulling influencers, you know, this is exactly what we think should be happening. And it doesn't concern us because either one of the two major parties needs to change to embody the policies that we believe in. And we believe that there's no chance of that happening. And that's why we're building a major new party that is free of corporate money. But by doing this work, one of those two things will happen. I know there's some people who rolled out hope that one of the two parties will change and will come around to some of these supermajority policies that I've described with public support. But if they don't, if they go down with the ship, then in fact, it is a major new party that will emerge that will finally break that migration further and further towards plutocracy and towards oligarchy.
Well, Nick, in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and the movement for a People's Party?
Come find us at peoplesparty.org. We're on every social media platform you can think of, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and many more, Reddit and Twitch and YouTube. And come join us, volunteer, contribute. We would love to work with you. We are building state parties across the country, and we need you to participate in that process.
Nick Branya, I wish you success with your movement. Establishing a People's Party is almost certainly going to be an uphill battle, but I think you know that. And hopefully those who have an interest in participating in the movement now know a little bit more about it and have the contact information they need to join the cause. In any event, Nick, I wish you luck, and I thank you again for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thanks, PJ. It's great to talk with you.